I think that for every entrepreneur that's listening to this, and maybe entrepreneurs that are just now starting out, there are opportunities for you, but you have to be, again, be adaptable, understand your market, know your target audience, know who you're pitching to, and know maybe potentially also where that money that they are getting to invest in you is coming from. Because if there's people that aren't, you know, tied to that money, don't necessarily align with your business model, even if the investor likes you, they may not be able to invest. And I think that that's the most important thing that I've kind of learned in my journey as well, because we've run into a plethora of investors that are like, yes, I'd love to invest in you guys. You're going to make $1 million plus and bring back all the returns. But the money that I have and have access to will not allow me to invest in you guys. And that's like the real reality that some founders come to face with personally.
What's up, family? Welcome back to another episode of Why Y'all Working. I am your host, Michael Ogusanya.
I'm Alair Jameson.
And we have an amazing guest here, the Adam Phillips. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we want to continue on a different thread of understanding Adam's support, his love for supporting startups. If you didn't see the previous episode, previous recording, we really got into a great conversation about Adam. Highly suggest you listen to it, like and subscribe. But now we want to talk about your career and the success that you have in entrepreneurship. I think the best place to start is, again, that role in the Department of Transportation. We've seen, and I'm seeing it more and more, Department of Defense, energy, innovation hubs within different government sectors are starting to become a bigger thing. Was your experience in that type of innovation hub the catalyst for you becoming managing director of Techstars and future cohorts?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say it was definitely part of the catalyst. It wasn't the whole thing, but I was so lucky to get. So I was just a senior attorney there doing the work of the great work within the office of PHMSA, which is mostly pipelines and oil and gas stuff. Got an opportunity from there to host, because nobody else wanted to do it, to host like we had a monthly kind of roundup that we did with, which was audio, video. It was mostly like putting on a show, but also kind of coalescing all the important stakeholders to do their presentations and doing presentations myself. I kind of hosted a lot of times. That kind of started me off on becoming a known quantity. So it was an opportunity really for me just to stand out and, try to sort of show up on the bigger stage and, get the secretary to and assistant secretaries to know my name. And so I did that for about a year. When I first got there, and then I would bring on the people basically from the innovation group that were, they were doing things in their office, and I'd bring them onto my show basically. So it was great, good opportunity, kind of mostly an internal audience, but we also had like thousands of stakeholders from the country just tuning in. And then I got exposed to what they were doing in the innovation office. So got pulled into their work kind of slowly at first, just as a participant, and then became, director of internal innovation. So it was mostly an office focused on the work of the department itself, but incorporating the work of our external stakeholders as well. So lots of constituent work, which sometimes can be really painful, but it gave me, again, a lot of visibility into what it was like to really be an intrapreneur in a massive organization. Like US DOT and then all the stakeholders that we have, the thousands of stakeholders that we have. So yeah, it was definitely part of the catalyst. Absolutely.
It's awesome. Again, entrepreneur is someone that can create value within an organization. Entrepreneur is someone that can create value for an ecosystem or multiple ecosystems at once. Maybe it's because I'm in a job, it's a big company, but you got there. It helps, I'm sure, too, having that senior role. It helps having the JD and having the experience. But you said, hey, I don't know if you had a manager. Hey, I want to create this kind of a webinar / TED Talk. But it was recorded content that was filmed. Was it live? The live content that was recorded and distributed across the organization?
Exactly. And so it was a live show that we then cut up and distributed. But we did it live, too, which was kind of fun. So we'd bring in people and there'd be podiums and, big things behind us and we're all wearing our suits and, we did a whole live show. It's cool.
Yeah. any troubles? Was there any naysayers, any gatekeepers in making that happen?
For sure. Yeah. Well, at first there were none because nobody thought it was a good idea to do. So they stopped doing it, or everyone was afraid to do it. but I said, no, I like it. This sounds good. I get to talk to the audience. Let's see. And I could stand out. And then once it became popular, there were naysayers and people didn't like that we were essentially, they were worried about, and to some degree, the truth is you do have to be a little bit careful because we were the federal government. You know, you can't put out messages that are contrary to like the administration or something. So you have to worry about that. But we never did that. And so people did try to kind of make it smaller once it got popular. But honestly, like to me, that was a sign of success. That meant we were doing something right.
Yeah. I mean, and you use that and parlay that into a larger role and a larger opportunity within the innovation of, infrastructure. Sometimes when you hear transportation, you think of buses, railroad systems, but yeah. Power, energy, those are huge, yeah. Huge parts of the American infrastructure.
When you're talking about your program and actually defining what success is, speaking about defining success, I want to, continue to push us forward along in the conversation. How are you defining success for the startups that you come across and work with on the day to day? I think that a lot of founders may have their own perceptions, not from sitting from the investor side of things, also being able to look at where the money is being deployed, what the margins are maybe for the firm specifically or whatever, and what the returns need to be in order for you to be an investable company to begin with. I think that some company may be investable for one investor, may not be investable for other investors.
100%.
To make that clear also. So, from your perspective, what is a successful startup? What makes a successful founder and what makes a successful idea come to fruition and how do you do that?
Yeah, well, this actually goes straight back to that work that I did at DOT because the biggest thing I asked that nobody had been asking was who's our audience? And just every time we got up and spoke to somebody, we had to think about the audience. Like, who are we talking to? What do we want to say to these people that are tuning in? And that audience would shift over time, but like we had to be relentlessly focused on them. And that's true still now, like 100%. I'm an investor of a certain type. When my Techstars investments are not PE investments, they're not late stage investments, they're not loans. Those are kinds of investments. They're not, equity-based financing. They are venture capital. So you have to know who you're talking to when you pitch Adam as a Techstars investor, because I can't invest any other way. I have to invest as a VC early stage investor. So that means I have to care about the founder, who the founder is, and the business I have to care about to get over a certain line. But mostly I need to care that the founder is ready to pivot when the business pivots because it's going to pivot. I have to know that. I also have to care about venture-backed returns. It's not my money I'm investing. If it was my money, I could care about anything I wanted on the return. But I have to care about venture-backed returns. So like knowing the audience is super critical for whenever you're talking to an investor. So for me, success certainly involves, founders who are effectively pivoting along with the opportunity. They're talking to their customers. They're trying to grow. They're trying to grow the business in a venture way, meaning, I'm not expecting 10x year over year. That's not the goal. But the goal is to size up. The goal is to create systems that eventually are outside of your control and are able to grow without you, because that's the only way you get to a scale that brings the returns back. So the audience, knowing the audience is huge. You got to know that. So with my Techstars hat on, when I make those investments, I have to be looking for founders who want to scale, who can pivot when possible, when it's necessary, because it's going to be necessary, who do plan to, maybe not fundraise like 6 times, but definitely probably at least want to fundraise at least 2 more times, a couple more rounds, because they're going to need that cash to grow at the pace that they probably want to grow, all those sorts of things.
No, and that's really important to note, because I think that, founders need to hear this from a lot of different perspectives, especially from an investor's perspective that may not be, I don't know what the arena of startups that you may invest in. You may be industry agnostic, right? Because Techstars does an array of things. Here in Baltimore, we have the Equitex, space, and then there are other places around the US and around the world that do other things like FinTech, et cetera. So, I think that for every entrepreneur that's listening to this and maybe entrepreneurs that are just now starting out, there are opportunities for you, but you have to be, again, be adaptable, understand your market, know your target audience, know who you're pitching to, and know maybe potentially also where that money that they're getting to invest in you is coming from. Because if those people that aren't, you know, tied to that money don't necessarily align with your business model, even if the investor likes you, they may not be able to invest. And I think that that's the most important thing that I've kind of learned in my journey as well, because we've run into plethora of investors that are like, yes, I'd love to invest in you guys. You're going to make $1 million plus and bring back all the returns. But the money that I have and have access to will not allow me to invest in you guys. And that's like the real reality that some founders come to face with personally. And I just want to personally put that out there because that's been my experience, right? I don't know if that's been Adam's experience or Michael's experience. I mean, we've been through the trenches together, Michael. So, you know, we've been through that ringer. But as far as, you know, entrepreneurs just getting in and understanding their market and what's successful for them and what's going to make them pop off, I appreciate you, you know, for shedding some of those gems, you know, to the public and to our audience.
By the way, I still run through that too. Like when I first was a founder and we were fundraising for the venture-backed startup I went to, I had to hit that same wall that just in my face. I was calling people to either ask them for their business or money. And I had my own agenda and I knew what my agenda was, but I didn't know theirs. And not understanding their agenda is going to kill you, because you get a no and you think the no is for like a personal reason. It's a rejection of you or your business, or you have a terrible idea. And it's not that. Maybe they just can't, they don't have any money right now because they invested all the money already and they're in the fallow period before they do follow-on funding. Like, or maybe, like you said, their LPs demand this kind of founder and you're this kind of founder. Like, there are a million reasons to get no's. And like, when you misinterpret the no's because you just don't know your audience, it gets you down and you start to feel sad. And sometimes it's just because you don't know the vocabulary. Like, we've got to be more curious about the people we're talking to, and also more discerning, frankly. Like, not all money is good money. You don't want all money. You know, I actually have discouraged some people from taking, I love you, Techstars, but from taking Techstars money because they're too far along. I'm like, you are going to be unhappy with me. Because your business is too big and I would take too big of a chunk at this stage and you're going to be mad at me in 3 months. And I don't want you mad at me because this is a long-term relationship. So I've discouraged people from taking my money because, you know, like, not all money is the same. You gotta find the money that fits you. So.
And I definitely appreciate that because that's out of the norm from a lot of the people that we've run into, unfortunately, also, right? Because, you know, it's just being real with people at the end of the day, right? I think that also goes a long way, just making sure that you really do care about the individual. So you're going to make sure that, hey, regardless of whether or not the options are on the table, I'm going to let you know that this is probably not the best option for you. And here's why. And I appreciate you even making the attempt to make sure that you're explaining that to some founders that, you know, come into contact with you on a day-to-day. So appreciate
on behalf
of the industry. Michael, did you have something?
Yeah, just when we're thinking of vocabulary, like something that's worth knowing is consensus or conviction. 90% of the VCs that you're going to work with operate off of either consensus or conviction. Is that 10% that have a really great, amazing rubric? And again, they're not PE, they're not late stage. Consensus is we have to get 8 out of the 10 partners to agree. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it's a beautiful, long-lasting VC. Sometimes it's people feel like their voice is never heard. But there's certain VCs where you have to understand it may make sense to connect with every venture partner, even though you're talking to a specific one. It may be important to ask, well, what are you currently investing in right now? And what's in your pipeline, your deal flow? Conviction is, and you see this sometimes, you know, and that's why it's worth traveling. New York, LA, San Francisco, Atlanta, you meet the partner and he or she or they just like you. They like who you are, what you do. And for people who are in that circumstance, don't feel bad asking them for money. Don't feel bad asking them for a meeting. Don't feel like, oh, because this is my sister's friend or my ex's best friend that I don't want to mess up the relationship. Take advantage of either understanding this is a conviction where someone will go to bat and move your deal along as long as you be frank and honest with them. Or again, it's a consensus thing. You have to play the game and you will get the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, money is such a it's so loaded emotionally for all of us that like separating yourself from the emotion, I think, is really important. And you're so right, Michael, you've got to be able to define like, okay, this is the group I'm talking to. And this person represents this in this group. Even like there's a whole thing on Twitter going around, don't talk to associates or something like that. I was like, what are you talking about?
I remember like, that.
That's insane. That is crazy. Now, the reality is, yes, some associates can't write checks. Lots of them can't write checks themselves. But typically what happens is they are the people who will champion your job to your deal to the person who does. So why would you not talk to them? That's crazy. But like understanding how the system works, who's in front of me, who is this person I'm talking to, has everything to do with being successful. And then to me, the other thing is like, this goes back, this is a life thing. Like you better know what you're about. Like you better walk into that meeting being like, this is our value. We are the asset. I tell this to the companies all the time. They're the asset. I need to invest in assets. It's them. They're the ones. Like I have the money, but it's not my money, first of all. And secondly, if I don't put the money to work, Techstars will fire me. I have to put it to work in assets, and they're the assets. So they got to understand who they are too, because otherwise you're just chasing other people's money and forgetting like, no, I'm the thing you need. So yeah,
super important. And speaking of that relationship between VC and startups, can we talk a little bit about that West Coast versus East Coast kind of VC mentality? I know there's rap beef going on, so maybe I should say West Coast and East Coast, but how do you pitch an office that has headquarters in San Francisco versus one that has headquarters in, you know, Manhattan, just off of stereotype, if we may?
Yeah, no, the stereotype is generally helpful, actually, in this instance. So I would say West Coast is more risk on and East Coast is more risk off. That's not always true, of course, but like that is a general take you can, I think, pretty much rely on like over 50% of the time. Meaning like West Coast money tends to be relatively new money that wasn't won over, you know, 40-year careers in the Fed, the federal government. Two generations down that grew in banks and is conservative because it grew over time. You know, that's East Coast money. West Coast money is like, oh crap, like we came up with this great idea and all of a sudden our options hit and, you know, we're multimillionaires. We got to put this money to work. That's risky money that's ready to sort of put it to risk again. That money tended to be the biggest bankroll that sort of amassed on the West. And so like when you're pitching West Coast, that tends to be who you're pitching. East Coast tends to be like Maryland, I think, has something like the fourth most accumulated wealth per household, I think, in the country. We're number four, I think. So there's tons of money that's sitting around on the East Coast, Maryland, you know, New York, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, tons of money. But it tends to be generational money, longer term, or that, you know, long career money where somebody was an attorney for the federal government for 45 years and then retired. And you don't think they're not writing you a $150,000 check to take a flyer on your, you know, angel check to take a flyer on your startup. They're not going to do it because, you know, they know what it took them to earn $150,000. They're not going to write you that check. So it's just two different ways to pitch.
It's awesome. So, you know, having the market competition, having the business model really thought through, having the financials done well is something that you need to do, really both sides, but especially on the East Coast, be prepared for those conversations.
Be prepared. Yeah, they're going to ask. Yeah.
So let's go down to where we are locally now. Again, finding yourself in what is the Baltimore ecosystem. There is the large DC ecosystem as well. Maybe let's highlight on what are the nuances and like the beauty of the Baltimore ecosystem.
Yeah. Baltimore, I'm from Buffalo originally, which is where I am now. And Buffalo and Baltimore remind me of each other a lot. They're like big, small towns. So they're old cities with, you know, long histories, but that have gotten kind of, they've shrunk a little bit because young people like me have decided they want to go other places. When I was young, I'm not young anymore, but they still remember. They still have long memories and rich histories and tons of resources and great infrastructure. And Baltimore's like that. Baltimore is, we're so great to have a partner, Upsurge. And we do a thing every Tuesday, which is, you know, Equitech Tuesday, you guys have probably talked about. I always say to the founders that are new in the ecosystem, I'm like, just show up four times in a row and four Tuesdays in a row, and you've met like 80% of the people or the organizations you probably want to meet. Like, and it's not because it's small, like it's a little bit small. It's not massive, but it's because people show up. People come and they want to be together and they talk to each other and they say, oh, I think I know you need to talk to. And then they introduce you to the person, like they pull them over and you have the conversation right there and it happens. Or they send you the email or they give you the phone number. Like, it is a connected ecosystem. So that was one of the pieces of advice when I started spending a lot of time up in Baltimore. People were like, just keep showing up. And it has definitely paid dividends. And I think it does over and over. Baltimore wants to be together. The ecosystem wants to champion each other. They want to see each other win. Now, of course, there's competition at some levels, but it's still like, it's still down homey enough and small townish enough that everybody's still kind of cheering for each other. So I love that.
Yeah, definitely feel that as like a 2-year Equitech, like every Tuesday warrior, I can relate to that. So even in you describing that, it makes me think of, again, that term we heard in 2020. Some people understood it, some people didn't. Equitech. When you describe that interwoven community of people looking beyond, you know, any factors and just trying to help the person versus the industry and the industry implications of equitable technology to improve the livelihoods of people at scale, What does Equitech mean to you?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's so funny because it is wild to hear people's different definitions. They all hover around the same, but they're all sort of unique. And it's like a little bit like the folds of a diamond or something like that, which is fun. But for me, anytime I'm looking for Equitech businesses, I'm looking for growth businesses. But depending on who's running it, who started it, how they're going to run it, or where they're going to run it, this is a business that's going to essentially kind of like farm itself into the community in a way that's unique and is meant to be additive and not subtractive. That's what I think about when I think about Equitech. So, we're still looking for growth. We're still looking for people who want to build big. I want to build billionaires all over the place, but I want those billionaires build in specific places with specific people. I want them to when they can do jobs in the U.S. versus somewhere else, I want them to be in the U.S. When they can fill their boardroom with, 50% women and 50% men, I want them to make that choice. Like that's what I'm looking for. And it is a bit amorphous. Of course, we're not like, I don't give the founders enough money to make really hard and fast rules for, how they run their businesses after they spent 3 months with me. I wish I did. But what we're really doing, I'm looking for certain kinds of founders. And, we're looking for those founders who are going to run those businesses in that way. And we're, essentially my job, I feel like part of my job is to cast that vision for them and make that something that kind of is part of the DNA of the founding, at least the propulsion of the founding of their business. And if I do that, I feel like I've been successful, even though I can't guarantee where they end up. But yeah, I feel like I need to cast that vision for them.
Wow. So companies that interweave DEI within their founding structure that want to focus on building something within their communities, those businesses, already exist in Atlanta. They exist in Indianapolis. They exist in Cairo. But there's something unique worth championing with Equitech companies in Baltimore.
Yeah. No, and Baltimore, again, Baltimore is special because it's not like even Atlanta. I love Atlanta, but Atlanta you can get lost in just as easily as you get lost in New York. It's hard to get lost in Baltimore. Like, it's a massive East Coast city on a major train line with, four like literal, world-class cities right next to it. And it's one of, it's an up-and-comer. And you can still get a house for under $300,000 some spots. Like, it is in a unique position, and being able to sort of capitalize on growing that city, being part of growing that city in a way that's thoughtful is special, So, so yeah, you can get lost in Atlanta. You're not going to get lost in Baltimore. And you know, everyone's going to be cheering for you. Not everybody, but almost everybody will be cheering for you. I'm realistic too, you know.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah.
That was a perfect way to wrap up a conversation about purpose and just opportunity, and weaving those in together is, it's like a beautiful thing. So, I mean, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing this. Demo Day's coming up soon. Want to make sure we can support. How can people reach you?
Awesome. May 30th is Demo Day, so that'll be a big ecosystem day. I'm excited for that. We're at the M&T Bank Exchange, so that'll be really fun. Plenty of space. If you reach myself or Darius Clare, so Darius, I'm going to give Darius's email too. Sorry, Darius. Darius's email is Darius.Clare, Darius.Claire at TechStars. I'm Adam Phillips, Adam.Phillips at TechStars.com. Either one of us, we can get you on the list, and yeah, we'll move you forward.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Adam.
Appreciate Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. This was fun.
Peace.